CJAM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CJAM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from musician Shalane Stebner.
So what can you tell me about your music and its impact on disability life?
So I would say that probably the biggest song that I've done that has anything to do with disability, I wrote a song, it's called As Strong As Your Daddy. And my passion is mental health, whether it's men's mental health or women's mental health. It doesn't matter to me what gender you are. Everybody's mental health matters. And so As Strong As Your Daddy, I wrote it in a time that my husband was laid off during COVID, and he kind of lost his sense of purpose and fell into a really, really, really bad depression. And I think it's really important that we talk with our children, because I have a 7 and a 9-year-old, and so I think it's really important that we talk to our children about our struggles, because, you know, if we don't talk to them about it, then when they're going through struggles, I do think that we're putting them at a disadvantage not talking about it. So I wrote this song, As Strong As Your Daddy, as if my husband had completed suicide, and I wrote it as, you know, a love song to my son about how, you know, it's okay, and you don't have to be strong, because I think that a lot of times, you know, we tell the men in our lives, like, you know, suck it up, and, you know, you can, you know, fight through this, it's fine, you're going to be okay, you don't cry, you know, all these things, you know, push it down, men don't cry, men don't have these feelings, men don't go to therapy, men don't ask for help, you know, and I think that's totally wrong. And so that's my biggest passion is to spread the word about mental health just in general. I have my own mental health struggles as well. And so I think that it's really, really, really important that everybody knows that it's actually quite normal to not be okay. And it's okay that you're not okay, right?
So do you find that using music to talk about issues like mental health is more of a cool, relatable way, rather than just giving a bunch of dry information in terms of actually reaching the public and breaking down those myths and first glance misperceptions?
Yeah, absolutely. I will tell you, I mean, not everybody is a songwriter, not everybody's a singer, but I will for sure use the platform that I have available to me and that I have given to myself. So when I was, a couple of summers ago, I was playing in a park in a bigger city, and there was a lot of homeless people around, and, you know, they all sat, like, there's a bunch of them that sat down and were listening to me sing, which is absolutely fantastic. But when I did, I always kind of preface As Strong As Your Daddy with a little bit of a informational kind of thing. And then after I was done singing, I went over and sat with a couple of them, and the one gentleman, he said, you know, everything that you talked about in your song, he's like, that's my life. He's like, I also got laid off, and then I lost my family, and I lost all these things, and now I'm homeless. And I think that it was a really good moment. for me to kind of reflect and go, you know, everybody is literally one decision away from either being on the streets or pushing or not, right? And so I will say that I think everybody kind of learns and everybody kind of collects information in different ways, whether it's talking, whether it's singing, whether it's, you know, reading a book or whatever. But this is the way that I can relay any of the information that I have. And so I think that it's best for me because that's kind of the way that I can expand and share. But it may not be best for everybody else, but I do think that it is absolutely my niche for sharing information.
So do you see yourself continuing to use music as an outlet to speak about issues like poverty and like mental health?
Do I see myself? Absolutely. Every opportunity. I do think that as a musician, given the platform, you know, we have an obligation to use that platform to better society, you know, to do all of the things that we in our best of abilities to share, to explain, to help. You know, it's not just about, you know, getting up on stage and singing. It is 100% about sharing and helping and you know, spreading the word about certain things. And you know, if we're not using the platform in that way, then we're not using it properly, I think.
So, how has the community responded to the song "As Strong as Your Daddy"? How have they responded in terms of touching on a difficult subject when it comes to really any conversation?
Yeah. So that song was actually the first song that I wrote that I decided to take songwriting seriously, because you know I'd always just kind of like dabbled in it a little bit, and so when I wrote it, I put it out on Facebook, and you know I did a nice talk before I played it, and you know talked about why it was important and whatever, and for somebody who is a small town girl that you know I didn't get a lot of exposure. And within maybe a week, it had over 5,000 views, and everybody was commenting about how important it was. I think that was kind of the kickstart for me to go, you know what, this is kind of where I need to go towards it. So every time I play that song, there's always somebody that comes up and is like, that I connected with that song so much. And so it's very important to me to continue to play it at shows. And I think that, like I said, every time that I play, there's usually somebody that comes up. And even if they don't come up and tell me how much it's connected with them, you know, you can tell, you know, you can see, you know, when somebody kind of looks at you and is like, yeah, you know, I think that I've never had anybody come up and say, like, you should never sing that song ever again, right? So I think that generally people have, when they hear it, they connect with it actually quite well. Just because I do think that, you know, it is one thing to hear songs about honky-tonks and, you know, doing fun stuff and things, but I also really like singing songs about, you know, harder subjects, you know, loss of loved ones and you know, our first Christmases alone and, you know, like stuff like that, you know, I really truly think it's also just as important to sing about.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah.
In this segment of our show, Michelle Bissell will be telling us about the VAD Society. So what can you tell me about VAD?
Well, VAD stands for Voice Sovereignty with Disability, and we're an organization that is cross-province, so anywhere in Alberta will help people and give disability presentations, and that's one of the services we provide is disability awareness presentations, which I'm the education coordinator of. So I set them up, do all the background. about networking, and then I actually give the presentation as well. And we do this from kindergarten all the way up to businesses such as Ecor and Suncor, and little sound shops and university classes. And also we have a lady in the office that will provide fill out forms for AISH, and which is our disability income here in Alberta. Stands for Assured Income for the Severely Handicapped. The name needs to be changed, but she provides filling out forms for AISH and AISH appeal forms and CPPD, and we also do simple taxes during tax season, and all these are for free for all of Alberta. And she does this through phone, Zoom, and in person. And we've just recently hired a social worker that will help with resources for housing and other issues people with disabilities have. So, and she's a new hire, so it's great to have her on board.
So
we provide a lot of services, and we're doing fundraisers now too. So, yeah.
So, how do you reach out to folks with disabilities to let them know that you're in their corner and your supports might be a benefit for them?
A big one is my presentations, because I talk about our services at the beginning. We also have social media, word of mouth, of course, and we have different events. Like just two weeks ago, we had a resource fair we hosted. So it's not only our name getting out there, but it's other organizations, disability organizations that can get the word out there. And we partner with several different nonprofit disability organizations as well. So our name we get referred to other clients of other organizations to come to us to help with forms and all that, and referrals and stuff like that.
So, in your time with VAD, is there any success moment or story that stands out for you?
Well, one of the biggest success stories for me is when I go out and do presentations, especially to schools. And then we do not hear, quite often we do not hear what happens afterwards, whether our information that we've given has made an impact. And one time we went to a school the following month or whatever. We had a second presentation at the school. And one of the teachers from the previous class we did said, you know what, this student went back home and they had a full conversation at dinner about what this student had learned. She was telling her parents what she had learned, and the parent came to the school and thanked them for having the presentation. So it's little moments like that I find are the biggest success. When I hear my teaching and my team's teaching gets passed on.
So, are there any projects on the horizon for the new year?
Well, like I said previously, we are starting our fundraiser. Several different fundraisers. We're starting, I'm not sure what it's called. It's a wine fundraiser, a survivor wine fundraiser. And the rules and everything are on our website. But it looks really interesting and really fun. So we're going to be doing a lot more different fundraisers, which we've never done before. So just to get our name out there and all that.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Of course.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
From coast to coast, people are tying red ribbons on more than just gifts this year. Join thousands of Canadians and show your commitment to safe and sober driving with Mad Canada's Project Red Ribbon. This small but mighty ribbon is a visual reminder to everyone to drive sober, especially during the holiday season when the risk for impaired driving is high. Why not show your support? Mad Canada's Project Red Ribbon. Tie it, wear it, share it, live it. Donate today at mad.ca and drive sober.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Michelle Bissell about the VAD Society, and musician Shalane Stebner told us a little bit about her music's impact on the disability community. In this segment of our show, Rabia Ketter will be giving us an update on Disability Without Poverty.
What's the latest? Well, we launched our Disability Without Poverty report card on the International Day of Persons with Disabilities in Mississauga with Mayors Patrick Brown and Carolyn Parrish, Brampton and Mississauga Mayors present, hosting a press conference with us and speaking to the issue of disability poverty. And you know, pledging their commitment to do their part in encouraging all levels of government to cooperate to ensure that we lift disabled people out of poverty. So this was our second annual report card. Last year we had given, in our first report card, we had given the government an I for incomplete, and this year we gave them a failing grade, an F. Simply because, yes, we made history with the law on the books in 2023. Yes, we made history by budgeting the benefit. But now we need to better that benefit. In fact, we are calling on government to triple the benefit in 2025 so that we get people started with a more adequate amount toward ending disability poverty.
So, as we look into 2025, what are some of the key needs that a person with a disability might be looking at in terms of what the benefit could help with?
Rising housing costs, rising food costs, rising costs all around. We are in amidst an affordability crisis, and you know, a snap election isn't going to repair everything unless there is a willingness on part of government to invest in the quality of life of disabled people and give them the financial security that they need and deserve.
So do you find that as you make a push forward, that leaders in government are willing to at least listen to what you have to say, are willing to examine this? We've all been told that the disability benefit was classified as a starting place, but can you honestly see them moving it so it becomes something sustainable and meaningful?
Without public pressure, I don't see it happening. Without having a champion within government, I don't see it happening. And, you know, I've been very clear in the fact that the Canada Disability Benefit Bill, the benefit itself, was no longer priority after it was enacted. And hence, shuffling of cabinet responsibilities and people responsible hence lack of attention from the Prime Minister's office, hence lack of acknowledgement and direct communication from the Finance Minister on this, regardless of our, budget the benefit postcard campaign, specifically mailing out postcards from across the country to the Finance Minister.
So, are there any...
Coming out with a, such a, unanticipated amount, such an offensive amount in the budget.
So, as we move forward, are there any steps that the public can take to not only get better informed, but to voice their concerns and let those in power know that this is unacceptable and we should be making it something meaningful for the disability community?
Well, Cam, it's an election year. I want politicians to learn how to pander to the needs of the biggest minority in this country. We are the 27% as disabled people. They pander to all kinds of stakeholders. They don't value us because due to our demographic profile in terms of volunteering for campaigns, in terms of making campaign contributions or financial donations to parties and candidates, because we're not doing all that, we are ignored.
I'm kind of curious there. But how can people with disabilities be making mass financial contributions if they don't have financial resources to lift them out of poverty in the first place?
Exactly. I completely hear you. This is where our friends and allies come in. This is where our families come in. If we make up 27% of the population, we have at least two people that created us in this earth, right? So there are other people in our lives who also need to leverage their capacity to influence the political landscape in this country. But what we can do, we can't be like in their face all the time. We can be in their face all the time, where possible. So those of us with lived experience, friends, allies, we need to come together as small delegations. Constituency by constituency, meet with incumbent and candidates to impress upon them that they need to make commitments if they want our vote. So we have to leverage the power of the vote that we have. And we have to get out and vote based on who supports our cause. And we need to make that known. That's what's going to make the difference in the next government.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
No problem.
Rabia was absolutely right in so much as disability benefits should not be allocated based on the idea of who can give the greatest amount of support. No disability agenda should be beholden to political pressures. These are people within society, people with needs, talents, hopes, dreams, all their own. And saying, just because you can't be the great support for my next election, does not mean they're not valuable members of society. For the fact is, many persons with disabilities would contribute if only given the right moment, the right tools, the right opportunities. Poverty is a vicious cycle. We all know that. It's something that we rail all our lives against. And for individuals with disabilities, who, especially those who acquire an injury, through no fault of their own, they find themselves in financial straits. They can sometimes pay rent, but not medical expenses, or vice versa. Truly, the disability benefit was the disappointment of 2024 in my mind. The fact is, so many people with disabilities found themselves thinking, for the first time, yes, someone cares. Someone's trying to lift us out of this situation. And I will concede it is a valid starting place. However, inflation isn't going to stop, so the benefit shouldn't either. The government should take whatever steps they can to ensure they're not just giving drop-in-the-bucket mentality. They're doing something meaningful, looking at the real costs, the real needs of life with a disability. It's going to be different for everyone, that's true. But the fact is, we shouldn't just lock ourselves into the idea that this is all we can do, at which point we could adopt a self-congratulatory attitude that says we don't have to do any more. We've done our part for the disability community. It's not true, certainly not enough, but a lot of people just stop when they think, oh yes, I've done something, ain't I great? But you have to ask those questions. Is it something meaningful? I talk a lot about disabilities employment. I'm a strong advocate for persons with disabilities being in the workforce and contributing. But I'm always left to wonder, sure, you can get them in the door, but is the work meaningful? Is the employer asking, am I making full use of this worker's potential? Do they have ideas and skills that might benefit all of us in the long term? Yeah. Disabilities, precautions right now, or something that we find ourselves legally beholden to do, or just as a matter of conscience. But if you look to the future, any one of us could acquire a disability at any time, and many likely will. But the fact is, if we prepare ourselves with respect and dignity for the disability community, we can help build into their lives, their futures, and our own. Because you can't just say it's enough. You can't just say these practices and these policies don't need monitoring. But the truth is, it's easy to say, go and make the world accessible. But if nobody has any idea how to do that or what the real needs are, how are they supposed to accomplish anything? That being said, I truly believe that many leaders do have their hearts in the right place. It's just a matter of recognizing this isn't some piece of paper you're signing off on. This is somebody's future. You have to understand that this is a person. Sure, you can enact the policy 6 months from now, but if the person needs the treatment today, what good will that do? Yeah, I know progress is slow, it takes time, it takes partnerships, but it must be something the disability community willing to self-advocate for and to work with friends and allies. The truth is, no one can make change all on their own. It's a simple fact, and having the right idea is a good starting place. Setting that precedent definitely opens some doors. However, the willingness to walk through is demonstrated by leaders saying, yeah, this is a good policy, but tomorrow, how can we make it a great policy? How can we ensure that individuals with disabilities are being counted as equals? Because truly, the only thing that makes a lot of them different is just one little factor. It is not the whole picture. It's not the whole person. Any individual with a disability is more than just their condition. Hopes, dreams, talents, insights, capabilities. That's what makes a person with a disability a person. And yeah, there is work still to be done. So, I encourage every person with a disability out there, recognize you are valuable. And recognize that your voice should be heard. Not to the point where it just becomes noise or lost in the shuffle. To where your words are articulate and understood. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.